So yeah, welcome again, everyone. We've got here a couple of guys who are known to many. Pete's got a history at St Elf's and moved on to another place last couple of years. And Doug's been here for some time, a bit, as I say, a bit of an institution here at St Elf's. Not as much an institution as other people. That's all right. You're less institutionalised than some others here. Like Doug Petering is extremely institutionalised. That's all right. So we're going to start, not without mucking around too much, we're going to start with a couple of intro questions. So it'll be my sit-down thing and get all casual here. And I'll turn to Pete first here. These are pre-prepared questions, so I know what's coming. Tell us about yourself and your family, Pete.
I'm Peter Eastwood. I'm 30 years old. I live in the Basin, which is in the Dandenongs. As Phil said, I spent about 20 years here. And now I'm actually at South Croydon Anglican Church, which is on Bayswater Road. So I'm a firefighter with Fire Rescue Victoria, which was previously MFB. I'm married to Rachel, and she was a speech pathologist and recently was working with CMS, but currently she's enjoying being a stay-at-home mum with our two cheeky boys. So I've got Reuben at home, who's almost four, and Elijah as well, who's almost two. They're both little boys that get up to a lot of mischief and love the outdoors, love playing outside, and anything construction vehicle related, they can name every construction vehicle. And even when they come visit me at the fire station, they walk straight past the fire truck and go look at the construction vehicles if there's renovations happening somewhere. So
that's fantastic. And what do you do in your spare time, Pete?
Spare time with two little boys is hard to come by. But when there is, I enjoy going about projects around the house, just making better spaces for the boys to have fun and enjoy the outdoors, and also enjoy playing guitar if got time, or doing some exercise, so going for a run or the gym, or and then once the boys are in bed, just Rachel and I just like to sit back and just watch something on TV.
And what is the historical connection between yourself and Doug, and what do you have to thank Doug for?
Obviously, went to St Alfred, so I know Doug from there, and actually know his daughter, Julia. So Julia and Greg actually go to South Croydon Church as well, and so our kids actually play along together. And then also my brother actually used to be housemate to his son, Chris, as well. But the most significant fact is when I was a young teenager, Doug actually invited me to Sunday morning small groups that was happening here at church. And so, that was such a small thing, but that tied with a number of other things, like being invited to youth group by a school friend, actually tied me in with St Alfred's and probably kept my Christian faith. I've got that to thank him for.
Fantastic. Thanks, Pete. And now we turn to young Doug over here. So, Doug, tell us about your family.
You're my family, okay. Leonie is my wife, lovely Leonie. We grew up in Tasmania, and we moved to Victoria in 1990. We have two children, Chris and Julia, as Pete just talked about. One's in Croydon South and one's in Kilsyth. But we have three grandchildren. You would have seen on the ad there's only two of them. That's because I can't count and can't spell. But the youngest one's only about a bit less than one, so that's great fun to have around. So.
Thanks, Doug. And what is your happiest childhood memory?
Ooh, happiest childhood memory. I'm not a great one for reminiscing, but I suppose growing up in Tasmania, we could do things. We'd go fishing, we'd go into the bush. My uncle and aunt had a farm, so going to the farm, that sort of stuff, just being out and about doing creative type things.
Fantastic. So now we both know a little bit about these guys. We're going to pray for them. So let's pause for a moment. Father God, we pray for Pete and Doug that you might anoint their words, that they might speak to the hearts of every man here, And every man might leave here with something learned about life, something that might inspire them to live as more obedient followers of you. In Jesus' name, amen. So what's going to happen now is he's going to ask Pete some questions, which he knows what are coming, and he'll answer them. And then I'll turn to Doug and ask Doug some questions, and he knows what's coming, and he'll answer them. And then there'll be an opportunity at the end for questions from the floor. So just register in your mind when they're talking what you might want to ask them, and save that for the end, and hopefully be able to fit them in. And so, Pete, tell us about your work journey and how you ended up as a firefighter.
Yeah, well, I actually always wanted to be a firefighter as a kid, and it's something that just stuck with me. And then I just, pursued it as a young adult, pretty much. But my first job was actually at KFC in Box Hill, so working there. And then after high school, I actually studied a diploma of fire technology. And then following that, I actually got a job in Box Hill as well, working with a company called Noel Arnold, doing consulting work. So as a fire consultant, I'd come around to buildings and check all the fire safety measures and make sure everything's up to scratch. But unfortunately, after a couple of months, our team got made redundant. So then I was out of work for a couple of months. But fortunately, I picked up a job fairly quickly in the construction industry, so actually installing fire alarm systems, so your fire panels and all the smoke detectors and all the things that make all the noise to evacuate you, that annoy you. So I did that for about 6 years. Whilst during that time in construction, I was actually applying for the MFB, and going through that process. Towards the end, I was actually starting a university degree in paramedics because I wasn't sure what was happening with the fire brigade, if I was going to get through or not. In late 2017, I actually got through the process and started in 2018. So I've been a firefighter for 4 years now. In terms of the process, I learnt a lot of patience through that time. It was about a 5-6 year period of going through the process. Fortunately, now it's only about a 6 month process, and so it's a lot quicker. But basically, you would do a stage, and then you'd wait 6 months to hear back, do another stage, and then keep waiting. And then if you failed a stage, you had to go back again. So the process involves just a general exam, so like an aptitude test. So your mechanical reasoning, verbal, mathematical, etc. And then following from there, you do a group interview, and then a beep test, and then a physical aptitude test, which is just basically a firefighter mini Olympics where you put up ladders, you drag hoses, you move gear around, you go upstairs. And so once you pass that, then you do a psych exam, which is a lot of multiple choice questions for about 2 hours, where you tick agree, disagree, and then they derive something from that, whether you're crazy or not. I think you have to have some sort of craziness in you to do my job as well. And then following that is the final interview. So that's just a panel interview where they ask you a multitude of questions, and they expect particular answers, but also want to hear from your experience and what you've got to add. So that's the process involved.
Fantastic. Tell us about a typical day at work.
A typical day, that's one of the things I love about the job. Every day is just different. You don't know what's going to happen. And a typical day could also be a night shift as well, because we work 2 days and then 2 night shifts. But generally, there's things that we do and need to happen. So normally we'll meet up first. Obviously, there's no call that happens immediately, because that can happen from time to time. But we'll meet up, we'll see that everyone's there for the day, we'll talk about who's doing what, so who's driving the fire truck, or who's in the back, or who's doing, is there any particular things people need to do, is there a particular drill we're doing, or we're going out in the community, saying, doing a fire education session, particularly for like preppies at schools. Unfortunately, the last 2 years, COVID's kind of stopped that, but hopefully it'll start up again soon. And then, so we do other things like checking keys as well. So we'll, yeah, just talk about what we're going to do there. And then we'll go out, we'll do our COVID clean, which is just every touch point, we'll just clean it from the previous shift to make sure, yeah, we're being COVID safe and clean the truck. And then we'll check the truck, make sure there's enough fuel, water, etc. Check all the gears there, check it's all working. So we've got what's called breathing apparatus, which we wear to go in the smoke so we can breathe. So we check all that's working, our medical equipment. And then we'll also, while we're out there, we might wash the truck or wash the engine bay because, yeah, there's diesel particulates that our trucks put out, so, and they're cancerous, so we want to wash them off. And then also, while we're out there, we might do a drill with the truck, so one run some water through, drag off hoses, whatnot. Or we might, say at Nutterwadding, they've got a rescue truck, so there might be a car that we could cut up in the backyard, just for a bit of fun, but also obviously training as well. And then if we don't do that, we might do a drill on like a PowerPoint, so refresh our knowledge on, say, breathing apparatus or tram incidents or medical incidents. And then later on in the morning, again, obviously, if there hasn't been calls, we'll go out, we'll check a building. We've got keys for all the buildings around, so we'll have keys for St Alfred's here, so we don't have to break the glass to get in if the fire panel goes off. So we check that they're working properly. We'll check hydrants. Again, COVID's had a bit of impact on doing certain things like that. Obviously go out as well. If somebody needs lunch from the supermarket or something, we all have to go in the truck and keep together, because obviously a call can happen any minute. And then if somebody, say, needs coffee as well, then we might all have to get coffee. And then after that afternoon, obviously if everything's been ticked off and there's not, say, something else on for the day, like another fire red or a drill, the afternoon's kind of yours generally. And same with a night shift, like after everything's been done, obviously there's less things to do on a night shift because we can't go out and about. Buildings aren't really open to check. You can get in the gym, do some study or just relax. And then obviously there's calls throughout the day, so this can vary from not really much happening to being out all day and not even checking the truck properly. So the calls that we go to obviously are fires. That would be a surprise. So car fires, house fires, grass fires, even bin fires, you name it. So then car accidents as well. We go to medical calls and also, yeah, chemical and hazmat calls. They're the type of things we respond to. And obviously the odd cat in the tree.
So work obviously can be pretty demanding and pretty stressful. So how do you balance being in a work day when you experience all that stuff, especially your more intense day and you go back to your family? How do you balance generally between work and family life?
Although it's not easy, I generally find as a good principle is to try and leave work at work. I think that's a good attitude. Obviously, that's not always the case. Sometimes you come home and you are thinking about work. I find it important to try and be present with my family when I am there. In my previous job, I definitely used to bring work home a lot in construction because I'd be going home, organising the next day, what materials I need, ordering that, sending emails or printing out plans. Whereas now, fortunately, with my job, I don't really have to do too much. I don't really have to do anything physically planning for the next day because the day is always different. There might be a little thing I have to do, but the main thing that I do with my job now is I might mentally bring a job home that I've been to, whether it's a particular call or I might be thinking over a decision I made at a job, or why did I do this, why did I do that. But what I find is I try and process that through the drive home and obviously process it with my shift mates as well. If we can do that there. But the drive home is a great time to kind of just switch off from work, think over the day, and then be ready for when I walk in the door to just focus on my family and focus on my kids. So yeah, I really find the drive home useful. In terms of the shift work, obviously that means I miss weekends where I'm working sometimes, so I miss regular church, I miss regular family gatherings when they happen on the weekends, if I'm working a weekend obviously. But on the positive, I actually get days off where I can go off to the Dandenongs with my kids or go out to the zoo on, say, a Tuesday where it's really quiet, so don't have to compete with all the crowd. So at the moment, it works really well for my kids and my family. So, yeah, we're really enjoying that aspect of the shift work. But obviously as the boys get older, as they do sports, then I'll start to miss that as well at some points. And also after a night shift, it can be difficult to be present if I've had a hard night, and to find time to rest with the two kids that are running around crazy can be difficult as well. But it's important to try and do that rest so I can be a better dad and a better husband. Yeah.
So Pete, when you're in the work situation, what difference does being a Christian make?
Definitely a big difference. Wherever I am in life, wherever I am at work, I know that God's with me. He's always there, and he's someone that I can try and model Christ. So I found, in my work at times in construction and in my current role, sometimes things have just worked out, or I've just been kept safe. Sometimes you can call it this is a coincidence, sometimes you can call it my training, but also sometimes I think it would be God as well, playing his hand there as well. It can feel like he kind of guides you to do particular things, or whether it's your gut or whether it's God, but I don't think it's always your gut. So I always think about the footprints poem, there in the hard times. He's ever present, he's always there, and he's there in the good times as well. I think a Christian faith also helps me put things into perspective. So at a tough call, at a traumatic scene, you see quite dark, evil things or sad things, but I can hold on to the fact that God's a loving, merciful and just God. Can't necessarily reason what's going on sometimes, but you can always just hold on to that. God is a loving, merciful and just God. So, and there are joyful and wonderful parts of this world as well. In terms of something else I just wanted to share is about Joseph in Genesis 37 onwards. Just wanted to encourage you that, God has plans for all of us, and he had plans for Joseph. So Joseph was the favourite son, which was a good thing, but then he got sold by his brothers to slavery, and that was a bad thing. But then he actually became in charge, so his role changed again, and that was a good thing. He was in charge at Potiphar's house, and then following that he got thrown into prison, and bad thing again, his role's changed, his life's changed, it's up and down. All through the time, Joseph stays positive, he loves God, he trusts God's plan. And then eventually he ends up in charge of Pharaoh's resources, and he performs God's rescue plan where he saves his family from starvation by building up the resources, the food to last. So I just wanted to share that little part about Joseph. That your life can change. You can be up and down, but God does have a plan, and we can just hold on to loving him, trusting him, and try and be positive.
Thank you, Pete. So following on from that, how do you live out your faith in the workplace?
I definitely no model Christian here. I'm definitely not perfect, but again, I just try to model Christ. I try to be the same person I am at home and the same as I am at work as well. So I try to be loving and caring and listening to my family and also my work colleagues as well. Often my work colleagues will eventually work out that I'm a good person or a Christian, whether it's me talking about how I went to church, if it just comes up, or talking about how I am a Christian, or they just find out, oh, gee, Pete's just different. He seems like a good person. Then they'll try and catch me out. They'll try and say something to me, or they'll put words in my mouth, or at a call they'll say, "Oh, Pete, why'd you do that? You can't do that." Or you, they'll just try and trip me up. But they eventually realise that I'm not really any different to them. Like, I'm still a human being. I'm still a sinful person, but they see that I am still different. There is something different there. And through that, there's actually been moments to share and plant seeds with my work colleagues. Often it's late at night on a night shift when we've just gone really deep into some conversation and we're talking about life and death, or we're talking about something else, and this is the opportunity to share a bit of God, share a bit of Jesus as well, which this is little seeds that I can throw in here and there, and just pray that God waters those seeds and there's other opportunities to do so.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, you're dealing with life and death and tragedy, on a fairly regular basis, so it does give the opportunity to raise those sorts of that opportunity to raise that sort of conversation. Yeah, it's fantastic. Hold on to your questions of Pete and just register them in your memory and save them for a minute, and we'll turn to Doug over here. Doug, tell us about your on the right page. I want to ask the same question I had for Pete. I'm sure
you answered
very
well.
Did you always want to be an accountant, and how did you end up with this profession?
Okay, that's an interesting story, because at the end of year 12 or something like that, again in Tasmania, I'm thinking, will I be a teacher or will I be an accountant? And I thought, I might be a teacher. And I thought, there's a lot of responsibility in being a teacher. You're going to influence young people, and I'm not very good at setting boundaries and all those sort of things. So I thought, And the other thing I thought was, we grew up in the era when you had 36 kids or something like that in a class, and so the governments were encouraging people to become teachers so we could have smaller classes. And I thought, everyone else is going to be a teacher as well, so there's hundreds of people going to be teachers. I think that's not good. Then I thought, the other thing is that if you progress in your career as a teacher, what are you going to do? You're going to become a principal, then you might move up into the departmental type stuff, so you're going to end up being an administrator type person. I think, why don't you just cut the teaching and just go straight to being in administration type accounting? so that's how I did that. So then within accounting, you can either be in the profession, so you're a public accountant, or you can be in a particular company. So again, I'm not good at being a full-time student. I don't like study, or I didn't in those days. And so I thought, no, I want to have a job and study part-time. Not realising that would take about 6 years or 7 years to actually finish your degree. In hindsight, I sometimes wonder whether that was a good move. Anyway, so what I did was I went again in Hobart. Hobart's a small town, so what do? You just wear the leather out on your shoes, go knocking on doors. Literally walked into different businesses and different accounting firms and said, "I'm Doug, have you got a job for me? And by the way, I want you to give me some time off so I can go to study." Finally, I did get one of those, which was really good. So it was a bit interesting that I didn't think, again, because my perception was that accountants in the profession are more academic than I am. I'm more of a practical type person. But I really took to it when I got there, because you're dealing with clients all the time. And one of the partners in that firm then, he was very interested in what I would call management accounting. He was sort of semi-director of the client, so you'd get alongside the client and you're actually dealing with whatever the issues are, and you then can help them in those sort of things. So with this, the other part of that story too is that, again, in Hobart, it's a small town. So if you're an accountant, you're a liquidator, you're an auditor, you're a tax advisor, and you probably did some financial planning, although that wasn't such a big deal in those days, and you did insolvency. So I got a very broad concept. And so when we actually get to Mitchell Wilson in a little bit later, we have our motto: I'm part of Mitchell Wilson, I can do anything.
So Pete's just shared, Doug, with us how some of the drama and some of the fun and some of the interest involved in his profession, but we all know that accounting is more fun than firefighting. So just tell us why that is so.
Oh, that's very easy. Why would you want to climb up a ladder to rescue a cat? You know, that's a... No, is it more fun? It is more fun in this, that you're dealing with some longer-term things. So sometimes you can look at someone's business or someone's situation and you can see they've got to get from point A to point B. And I can tell you that, but I've got to actually encourage you and walk with you. Again, when we started Mitchell Wilson, we started that in 1991. Some of you that are institutionalised will know that that was the recession we had to have. And when we went into that business, I think, there's a number of clients in a lot worse situation than I thought. And so you could see what they had to do, but to actually encourage them to do that, and bearing in mind then I was only a 35-year-old person, and they're saying, and you're from Tasmania, what do you know? So it was great fun in dealing with all those sorts of issues and actually then seeing 3, 4, 5 years later the results of some of those decisions that you make early on.
Thanks, Doug. Have you ever had ethical dilemmas in your business or had to make a stand for what is right in the face of contrary opinion?
Yeah, a few times that's happened, and the challenge always is that we have the law and we've got to take advantage of the law to the best possible situation. Do we have a reasonably arguable case for doing what we're doing? We still got to bear in mind that there's business risk in whatever you do. And so you've got to balance all those sort of things out. And some of the areas where I've seen that's probably not where you'd expect, not in dealing with the tax, because quite often people are not afraid, but they're a bit hesitant about doing the wrong thing as far as the tax man is concerned. It's more in effect of dealing with staff dealing with some where a client might overpay my client and say, well, should we keep the money or should we send it back? I say, well, you should send it back. So those sort of things are interesting. And if I come back to a staff situation, there's 2 or 3 times when the client who's too close to his staff members, one case in comes to mind, this guy, he says, I've got this person, she's been really, really good for 10 years and something's gone wrong, something's changed in her life or the way she's doing her job is not as it should be, et cetera, et cetera. And he was beside himself, he couldn't deal with it. So this is the sort of thing you do when you're an accountant, you go and sit down beside them and have a chat and say, there's something gone wrong in the relationship between you and the boss. It's not working, is it? No. And it's gone past the point of repair. Yep. Okay, so let's have a discussion about how we might separate. So we've had to do that 2 or 3 times. So that's, and to do that with some degree of care and understanding, because that there's probably fault on both sides, or whatever's gone on doesn't matter. We are where we are. Can we fix it? Can we do it with respect and with dignity?
Thanks, Doug. So you've been a full-time professional for many years, and you've also been of service in the church for many years, and there's been stressful times during that time. Tell us about the most demanding period in that phase, and how did you balance that with work and family responsibilities and church responsibilities as well?
Yep. Some of the difficult times were probably, as I mentioned before, when we first started Mitchell Wilson in 1991, bearing in mind we bought that business. And that was really hard because of the recession and just the way things were going. Probably the next time would have been in 1999-2000 with the introduction of GST. And again, that was just brand new and we didn't know what was going on. We had the legislation. We had to learn today so we could actually explain to clients and implement and get everyone registered. That was really... I found that quite challenging. And at that stage, I would work 6 days a week. And I remember one Saturday, it was about 5 o'clock, I think, better go home now. Then I thought, I still got a bit more to do. Maybe I'll come back tomorrow. And I thought, if I do that, I'll be back every day. So I stopped. The other challenging time then would have been when as with as in partnerships, you have issues. So we had a transition of from one partner to another, and that wasn't very successful. So after about 18 months, I told my wife, my daughter is a lawyer, and I rang up my wife, and Julia was with her at the time. I said, I've just sacked my partner. And Julia says, you can't do that. I said, I just did. So don't tell me I can't do anything. Anyway, so that was particularly stressful. The other time was when we were in probably 2008 to 2009. We were doing this building here, and we came to meetings every week. And another client was doing a transition, so they were selling half of their business. That took us probably 2 years to do that deal. I don't know why it was so complicated, but anyway, it was. So those times were really, really stressful. But how do you keep on going? One of my favourite people in the Bible is Nehemiah, and he had the challenge to rebuild the wall, and he knew what he had to do, and just did it.
Yeah, no, it's good to have these biblical figures to follow, Joseph and Nehemiah. It's great you've both pulled one out. Have you been able to maintain a regular quiet time, a regular personal quiet time during especially these difficult times?
That is always a struggle and a big challenge to me. But I do reflect at times of major decisions and major things happening, for some reason you just make that extra effort, and that gives you the extra resource and insight to be able to do things. And again, I think in prayer triplets were really useful. I think I was with two other guys for about 10 years, and so was part of the time when we were doing the building and other things like that. They were really, really helpful, and small groups as well. I think it's important always, sometimes you're in the middle of something, and what are you going to pray for? I want to pray for, there's so much stuff going on that you're going to find, I need wisdom. That you're going to tell me this is what I should do, you're going to tell me this is what I should do, and you've got all these people giving you advice as to what should happen, and you've got to actually discern what's the right thing, so you need the wisdom. So I pray quite regularly for wisdom and discernment, and then we need the courage and the boldness to be able to do what we need to know.
Yeah, wisdom, discernment, courage and boldness. Have there been any witnessing opportunities in the workplace that you would like to share?
Okay. The life has major events. So if there's a death or if that has financial implications, if there's a marriage, there's generally financial implications. If someone's starting a business or whatever else, those are major, major events that happen. And I think that the death one is probably the one where you get the most opportunity. And I do recall a few years ago, a client and his mum died. This bloke's worth a lot of money, and he was doing it on the cheap. And so we went to the to the funeral parlour, and there was about 10 people there. I had my accountant suit on, so I looked a bit like a vicar. So the people let us do a few things. We're only supposed to be there for 5 minutes. I think we're there for about half an hour. So a couple of people got up and said a few things. And at the end, I said, look, let me just pray. So I went and had a prayer for that family. So, and since that time, that family have asked me to pray for other things for them as well. So, yeah.
That is absolutely fantastic. What about mentoring, Doug? Have you been a mentor or been a mentee, and how has that impacted your life and your journey?
That's like being a teacher. No. Mentoring, I don't think I'm very good at mentoring. I have this ability, whether it's an ability or not, sometimes I can look at a situation and I can say, we've got to get from here to here. And I do that sometimes, but then to explain, I can see all the steps, but for me to then explain those steps and how I came to that conclusion is quite challenging. As a mentor, for someone to be a mentor to me, I've observed some people within the church, and I look at them and say they are giving me a good role model. But I also look outside the church, and some people, some of the clients that I've dealt with, they're very, very good at dealing with their client and very, very good at dealing with their staff and building very, very good relationships. So I have learnt by observation rather than having a formal mentor-mentee relationship. And as I say, I'm not sure that I'd be very good at being the mentor in that situation either.
By the way, this church does have a mentoring program available to all services, Peter, and they contact people if you are interested in being a mentor it's mentees really. There's plenty of mentors, and in actual fact, there's plenty of mentors, but mentees are always an appeal for mentees. So, Peter, they contact people for mentees for Asset 6 and Asset 10, particularly. I think there's Bethany. Well, Bethany has been, but she's... Yeah, just speak to the staff. Speak to the staff. But there are definitely people set aside who can help you out if you want to be a mentee or do mentoring. So we've finished a little bit early, which is good. So we haven't got the stressful little run-around time with questions like we normally have and cut people short. They might put their hands up and have to sit them. I'm sorry, just ask after. So I will run around. I like running around. So Ron's up first. He put his paw up first.
Thanks. A fire question. We hear a lot of reports on the television of fires. I don't hear very often what the cause of them is. And I reckon it would be really good if there was more emphasis given to what caused fires to help people to take precautions. Some of us got inbuilt safety, but others haven't. Is it a media problem, or could the fire... brigade do something about it, or is there a reason that they don't do it because it might scare people or something?
Well, often when the media gets news that there's a fire, the fire will still be going or it's only just been extinguished, so the cause hasn't been identified. And so by the time the cause has been identified, the media's obviously gone. They're not going to publicise it the next day. They're not going to then flash up, oh, by the way, this fire we talked about yesterday was this. So for instance, like on Fire Rescue Victoria's Facebook page, or I think they have Twitter, or on their internet website, they'll publicise once the cause has been determined. But again, they'll just move on to the next one as well. So like if they've determined fairly quickly, they'll put there was a house fire here and it was determined to be this, or they'll just put this cause is still being investigated. From my experience, a lot of it is electrical fires, and a lot of fires happen in the kitchen. So if you want some, I can give you plenty of fire safety tips, but the couple that I'll give you is have a working smoke alarm. I'd encourage you to even put it in your bedroom nowadays, because a lot of us have phones, laptops that we charge in our bedrooms, and they can often catch fire as well, especially if you put it under the mattress or the blanket or whatever. Overloading PowerPoints. Have a working smoke alarm outside your bedroom, but I'd also encourage in your bedroom if you can. And then also even a fire blanket. There are ways to use it, I can show you if you want. But just if you have a little kitchen fire, you can quickly put that over and still call us. We'll come out, we'll make sure it's safe. But that can really just lessen house fires there. Can I add anything else, anything further? Or?
Thank you. Okay, Ken's got a question for us.
Being there's a ship fire with $400 million worth of Volkswagens and Bentley on board, and they can't put it out, and they blame the fire continuing on lithium batteries. My question is, would you have a lithium battery installed in your home?
Well, I do actually have battery-powered power tools and garden tools, but they're all in the shed outside, so I don't actually keep them inside. Main thing with lithium batteries, don't keep them on charge. So if you leave them on a charger, they have to kind of expel that charge slowly. And same with charging your phone, your laptops. Like once it's charged, you just unplug it, switch it off. Lithium batteries, they obviously do cause fires. We always get them at the recycling places where they're storing them all together. Like it only takes one of them to combust, and then they're all going up, and we just can't. The only way to put out lithium batteries is to submerge them in copious amounts of water. So that's basically dump them in a shipping container full of water, which is, yeah, very difficult, especially on a ship. The more water you put on a ship, the more it sinks. So, yeah, but in terms of like storing lithium batteries, I'd encourage you to keep them outside. There's, and as long as they're in good condition, they should be okay. But yeah.
Next question from Railton.
Thanks very much for this morning. Both of my boys are, they work in the construction industry. One's a supervisor and the other one is a sparky. And they both actually tell me at different times how toxic the culture is, the work culture. Now, I fully understand you can get toxic work culture as much in an accounting firm as you can, you know, anywhere else. You know, it's an ugly culture. People are very disrespectful towards each other and all that sort of stuff. I was interested in the Fireys, you know, what the culture is like there, because many of these guys have trade backgrounds. I don't want to put words in their mouth. I'm getting the feeling that it's a better kind of culture.
Definitely. No, it's definitely a better culture because you pretty much are a family. You're living in each other's space for 10 hours a day and then 14 hours overnight. You're sharing the same spaces. There's always going to be people in every workplace, and I'm sure Doug might want to share something as well. Like in any organisation, there's always going to be some people that are hard to work with or difficult to work with or might create like a toxic vibe. From my experience in work, like there hasn't been anywhere where the whole station is toxic. I'm sure it has happened in the past, there's always rumours of old, say like Richmond Fire Station back 20 years ago, one particular shift used to be very particular in the way they would do things, so it's hard for a new firefighter to fit in because they were very set in the way, whereas now culture around the whole job is pretty much very much similar. And in construction, in my experience, there's definitely is toxicity in some elements. But fortunately, I was in a small company and we worked well together. I think it just varies from, you just keep away from those people that are doing that.
That's a very interesting question because we think about different organisations and I deal with some companies that might have four or five people in them and some that might have 300. And the culture comes back to, in my view, the owner or the directors knowing what's the purpose of the organisation. One client in particular, I've said to him many, many times, he says, don't worry about the money, worry about providing a good service and looking after your staff. If you do those two things well, the profits will follow. So it comes back to what's the purpose of this organisation? Is it to make money? And if it's to make money and that becomes the aim of the organisation, it just goes down the toilet, really. So how do we actually, and from my perspective, I get to influence some of those owners and decision makers to say, let's focus on doing what we need to do. Whatever your business is doing, it's providing a service and helping somebody. So you have to do that, and then if the whole team is focused on doing that, then you can remove some of those bad culture type things. Having said that, if there is people in the organisation that are not part of, have got bad culture and don't fit your culture, it's good for them to get off the bus. That's more difficult these days than it has been, but sometimes, I had an issue in the last month where the CFO that we'd only appointed in the last 2 years wasn't doing what we wanted him to do, and the CEO was getting advice from one of the board members who happened to be a lawyer. I like lawyers, by the way. But and he's saying, oh, you can't do this, you've got to follow due process. And I'm saying, but basically we're watching Rome burn and doing nothing. We have to do something about it. So again, I encouraged him to have that discussion with the CFO and say, it's not working. It's not going to work for us. Can we have a sensible discussion about an exit? And that exit will happen over the next little while. So, yeah, culture is very, very important. Can we influence at that level? Yes. But even on the ground, you've got to encourage people to actually deal with things. You can't just put it under the carpet and let it disappear.
Thank you, guys. Dirk now has a question.
Hey, I think this is specifically for you, Pete, just because you mentioned it. I don't know whether Doug will have an angle on this, but I was interested in drilling down a little bit on the comment you made about some of your colleagues trying to catch you out with your faith, etc., and drilling down on that. And I'm curious about what you might think or might have discovered is some of the motivations behind that, whether it's just kind of, yeah, blokey banter. I've just made an assumption that's blokey. I'm not sure what your workplace is like, but is it blokey banter? Have you found that... Yeah, I do find sometimes that comes from a real place of, you know, something quite genuine or hurt or whatever, but other times it's potentially a bit more malicious and they are actually genuinely trying to catch you out and poke holes in things, yeah. And over time have you found that... Have you kind of discovered some of what's behind that?
Yeah, well, I think that actually almost... ties a bit in with the last question a little bit as well. Something else I was going to add, like, with people like that, generally, like, from my experience, it's just been pretty much banter. Like, they found something that they can try and pick at, because that's what fires are really good at. We spend a lot of time with each other. We find something about you that we can pick at and try and get you to rev up and fire back, because yeah, that's just what we enjoy. It kind of helps pass time, but it also helps deal with situations that we do see, just to kind of have a laugh. And also, so as a shift, like, we need to be aware of each other. Oh, hang on, that was actually a bit too far for where we've gone there. Most people are good at knowing where the line is and not to cross it. And in terms of the ones that are trying to actually generally upset me or upset somewhere else, they get found out pretty quick, and then pretty much they won't be isolated, but we just will try and not really take a hold of what they're saying, and just kind of... you also, obviously, as a Christian, you want to spend time and love them and try and have opportunities, but there's also... you might give them, say, an hour... where you give them a bit of time, and then hang on, they're starting to fire up on something or trying to pick away at something, then you might just walk away or just say, I'm not going to involve myself in this discussion. In terms of, like, that last question as well, actually, with MFB becoming FRV, there's actually been a lot of changes, obviously, that have started to happen, and there's lots of differences between the old CFA staff and the old MFB in terms of our enterprise agreement, and also just in terms of culture as well. So that often can become a heated discussion at times. And in terms of that, for me, I actually find myself to kind of almost switch off from it sometimes and just walk away, go do something else, because I don't want to get heated up as well in terms of that. Because it can almost be toxic in that, because it can be just a lot of anger around the table, just, oh, they're doing this or we're doing this and such, or it can be financially as well, like they're getting paid more, so on. So just to step back from that, obviously also try and be there sometimes to be a Christian influence and love them, but there's also times where I think you just need to step away as well. I hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Pete. Bill has a question.
Doug, I didn't want to let you down. I'm not asking you a question. When you were answering the questions and reflecting back on some of your experiences, you looked as though you were some emotional experiences there you're reflecting on. I know life is very lonely at the top when you and you're at the top of your organisation. How did you cope when you had those emotional, stressful situations which you couldn't really talk to with anybody else in the company? How did you get through those?
That's a good question. I suppose you just did it. Sometimes, I'm not sure how to answer that question, Bill, because I am the sounding board for so many other people in that situation, so you take their stress as well.
But you have your own.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I mean, sometimes there's what talk about those major decision times when that probably encourages you to spend more time in prayer and to just keep thinking it through. It never kept me awake at night. I could always go home and just switch off. And much to Leonie's disgust, she can't sleep, and I just go straight to sleep. What's going on here? I don't know how I did that, other than you just got to do it. How did you do it?
It's not my show. I'm not going to talk about it,
but yeah. No, I'd say yeah.
Okay, Doug's got a question.
Pete, you've touched on this just a little earlier, but perhaps if you've been viewing politics in Victoria in the last 5 or so years, fire rescue and fire issues, CFA, have probably been front and centre, you know, as much as any other issue, and some ministers have lost their portfolio on account of it. How has this played out for you?
Yeah, again, as I was saying, it can become a discussion around the mess table. But in terms of reality, I try and, again, focus on my job is to be a firefighter, walk in the door, and that's what I'm going to do. I don't need to think about that, because reality is our job hasn't really changed. We still jump on the truck when the tones go and we go to a call, and we still, give the best we can to the community. So there hasn't been as many changes as there probably really should have. Initially, once we got amalgamated between the CFA and MFB in terms of the staff, we should have just been under one banner and one operation, whereas we're still effectively two different organisations under one organisation, if that makes sense. So they've merged us in terms of the name, but slowly things are changing, and that's a good thing. So in 10 years' time, it'll be great. It'll be working really well. And I just try and not bring that home, or really, bring it home to my family, so not to dwell on it, because I still have a job and it's still relatively the same. We're not getting forced to go to Mildura yet, but I don't know, maybe they... they might one day. And that's not a bad thing as well. And I just wanted to probably clarify, in terms of the banter as well, like things that we'll talk about. For instance, one of my work colleagues is building a pool and he's having lots of issues, so we'll pick at that. We'll go, oh, how's the pool going? And then, for instance, another one, he buys a house, turns out it's got termites, so he had to cancel on it. So then we'd put little termite pitches around. So things like that. It's generally not really harmful. Like obviously, like if it does affect them, then we'll step back. We'll go, oh, hang on, we probably shouldn't have put termites all in his locker or whatever. So, yeah.
Okay, Mike's got a question over here.
Yeah, it's really for both of you, and just want to say how much I've appreciated this morning. It's been really good, very helpful, and thank you for all you've shared. Mark Green and others have done a lot on, you know, Christians and the workplace, and he spoke here at St. Alfred's a few years ago, and you know that work for the majority of people is, you know, as Christians is their calling. And, you know, where God has put us to be for like 80% of our sort of waking time in our working life. And what I was thinking was that, Doug, you took a huge risk, as it were. You know, you came from Hobart over to Melbourne. You bought a business in 91. Pete, we used to talk at Asset 6 afterwards, and you were going for another interview with the fire brigade, and you had a few knockbacks over the years, and you just kept going, and I've always been really impressed with that. And to see you now, you know, 4 years under your belt as a firefighter, I think for a lot of us who know you from St Alf's, that is fantastic, because we know that was tough, and you really had to fight for it, and you really believed, that's what I want to do. You left Hobart, Doug. You fought for that job, Pete. When you look back now, do you feel, both of you, that was the right call for me? I'm in the right job now. I've been in the right job for several decades. And that this is where God has wanted me to be. And has that been a real blessing for you in your Christian life? This is the right place. And I've got real assurance about that. Just be interested to know what you have to say.
Yes. The short answer to that question is yes. Do I feel I'm in the right place? We did look at Esther last year, and it says, I was born for a time like this. And you keep asking yourself that question. And the challenge that I have in mind, to me, is that was yesterday's newspaper. So I've been there, done that. I've done certain things. And I keep saying to myself, even though I'm only mid-60s, 65 or something, I'm still young, I'm still energetic. What do you do? How do I use my skills and things now? So where is the right place for me now? Is it still being in the workplace? Should I exit that, and can I do something else? I do jokingly say to people that I don't retire, because there's too many people like Bill Austin who've got jobs for me lined up. So I think, no, and that is being flippant, really, but that's part of the thing. The real question is, what should we do now? Because even though I'm getting older and I've been through the career, my view is that we've got to make a contribution. As an aside to that, and I don't just impose that on myself, I'm the chair of Nedraska as well, and we had some discussions last year, and they're asking each of us as board members, what are some of the cultural type things you want to have throughout Nedraska? And I said, for the participants, I want them to be able to make a contribution, however small, because I think that it's part of our innate nature to be able to make a contribution to the community in which we live. And in our, we have that in the Christian world as well. How do I serve beyond the Christian world and bring God's love outside that? So I'm not sure if I've answered your question, but that's what I feel from what you've asked me.
Yeah, do you want me to put? Do you want me to answer as well? Sure. Yeah. Definitely. Like, I feel that, the job I'm in now is where I hope to stay at the moment, and that's where I feel that God has called me to. It's just something that did stick with me as a kid and kept going. I look back at that time. I applied when I was 21 first to get in, and I got in at 25, 26. Into the fire brigade, and I look back and go, actually, well, as a 21-year-old, I wasn't ready for this job, for the things that I have to do and things that I have to see. And in terms of my experience, like the 6 years, my work life in construction, like that, this added so much value. Obviously, now I go into buildings and I know how they're built from the ground up, so that adds value as well. This is the life experience that I had in that time up till then was invaluable. Although at the time I was thinking, gee, I just want to be a firefighter. That's where I feel like I want to be. But now I look back and I can appreciate that time. I feel at the moment it's where, I'm loving the job. And hopefully in 10 years that's where I am. But I just have to, again, seek God and just pray to Him and ask Him where He does want us to go in life, in terms of work, life, family, or where we live, where we go to church, and so on. Yeah.
Mark has a question at the back here.
Thank you both. It's really great to hear from you both this morning. And Pete, I wanted to echo what Mike said. It's been great just to see you persevere over the years, because I remember talking to you when you're a young guy, and you know, you just kept coming up against, you know, you persevered and you got there, and well done. The question I wanted to ask is that you've talked about, you know, putting termites in people's lockers and other, you know, friendly things like that, and I understand workplaces do that. What's the flip side? Because you also made some references to and you talked about people sort of testing you out and checking, you know, whether you're as legit a Christian as they might think you ought to be. But what about the other end of it, where, you know, you said you had some of those conversations late at night on shifts and things like that? What sort of issues, I don't want to break any confidences, but what sort of issues come up, and where have you been able, on what sort of issues and in what sort of context have you been able to maybe talk a bit of God's truth and blessing and grace into people's lives? And Doug, I wanted to ask you the same question, if I can.
Yeah, well, I think, like, a lot of the times it's often what's happening in the media or what's going on. So, for instance, when the whole Catholic Church thing was happening, and say, like, oh, well, Pete, you go to church, you're a Christian, how can this happen in the church? And so I could, often what I would say there and share is, well, the church is still a sinful place as well. Sinful people go to church as well. Jesus is for everyone. And so, yeah, I'd share things along that line. And yeah, it is... awful thing that's happened. But, yeah, again, God is loving it. Jesus is for everyone. So just try and plant little seeds. Obviously when we do face calls at where there has been a death or whatnot, so we can obviously have black humour where we deal with that a bit, but also we could... talk a bit more after station. I can kind of share a bit about my views in terms of salvation, I guess. Talk about how, again, Jesus has died for our sins, for everyone. It's always just little seeds that I can plant. Sometimes they're willing to listen, or sometimes, off they'll go. Yeah.
That's a good question. One that comes to mind is this guy who I subsequently found out that he started his own journey to become a Christian, and he goes to another church, and he invited me down to his church. But a few times over breakfast, we would have a serious discussions about Christian issues, how do we think about the world. And he's a very interesting guy in lots of ways, but this one that comes to mind is that he's very much into marketing. And up to this point in time, he says, when you're marketing, you've got to feed the greed gland. And I'm thinking, that's a challenge to me. And it's a challenge in commercial reality that for you to get more sales, that you've got to encourage someone else to want to be greedy. So, and particularly when he was doing B2B, so providing advice to other businesses, and he's motivating them to be greedy. So So how do we actually reflect on that? And what's the correct Christian approach to deal with that issue? So that I still want my business to be successful, but why am I there? All those sorts of issues come out of those discussions.
Jacob.
Hey, Doug, I was just wondering, in the last however many years, there's obviously been a social change and challenges with particularly LGBT stuff. I was wondering if you have felt pressure for your workplace to be particularly inclusive, or something that you may not fully believe in, from employees or from other people in management, those sorts of things, and what you have done to respond to that, or is it that accounting is not that much stuff there in that?
No. As accounting gets right involved in all those things. That's a very good question. Again, I like these questions. That I'm on the board of one organisation, and on that board we have one person who's very much into the LGBTIQ, such that they... are one of the advisors to the minister of the state government. And the pressure has come a few times to for the board to be more, at least the board to be more inclusive. Let's not worry about further down the line at the moment, because that was the issue. And they were putting forward that we should make sure our board is more representative and et cetera, et cetera. And I argued back at that and saying, no. We've got to think about what's the purpose of this organisation, what's the best person to do the role, and if they happen to have those views, that's fine. I do have this challenge, though, that as a Christian, can I impose Christian views on the world? I think that my job is to represent Christian principles and to argue that that's how it should be, accepting that the world at large doesn't accept that. And I find that a great tension in those situations. How do we deal with that? How do I portray that view? How do I portray the view that God loves everybody, irrespective of their views, irrespective of their sexuality, irrespective of everything else? God loves them. We had that discussion in our small group a year or so ago, slightly different, but we were talking about Muslims. And our job is to love Muslims, just that we don't agree with their philosophy or their religion, but we still got to love them because God does. So how do I actually carry that out on the ground? And that's a tough question and a tough way to deal with it. So I'm not sure if I've answered that enough, but
no, thanks, Doug. I think there's one more. We've got time for one more question. I think there was one hand that went up. I can't remember who it was. Was there another hand that went up, or are we all done? Are we all finished? Oh, sorry. I was going to do the auction call. Keith.
Yeah, when I retired, I went to 3 or 4 financial advisors, and they all give me a different tilt on what I should be doing. I had friends that retired, had the same problem. I've got friends who have even asked me today, why did you choose that portfolio? And just at the moment, I really don't know why I chose the portfolio that I chose. Probably he was more convincing than the other 3 or 4. Is there any secret to working out who's going to give you the best deal?
The short answer to that is no. So I will charge you for the answer, yeah. Yeah, someone did say something to that effect on the way in. I have to give my normal disclaimer. No, look, everyone has a different view of the world in finance, and you need to have some understanding of what you're getting into. I mean, I'm happy to talk to you this for 2 or 3 minutes without being too boring. One is that when you're investing, there's basically 3 categories of assets you can have. One is cash, which is term deposits, that sort of stuff. One is shares, and the other is property. And there's subsets of all of those. So you've got to think about the issues that relate to each of them. Maybe I shouldn't keep on going on there because I'll chat to you after. How about that? Because it'll take a long time.
Okay, thanks, guys. Look, I'll try not to forget anything. I think first up, I'll just pray for both the speakers and a lot of what they've just shared. So first, and we'll take it from there. Father God, I pray you'll bless Pete in the workplace, in his banter, in his engagement with his colleagues, in his engagement with the public, when he attends stressful situations, demanding situations, criminal situations. Just give him your peace of mind. He know your spirit working through him and how he acts and how he speaks. And may know your wisdom in life's decisions, and help him to continue to be a loving father and husband in the home and in his personal life and also in his professional life. And bless him in years in the future as he continues in the profession that he loves, in Jesus' name. And we also pray for Doug. Give him, as he continues in the workplace, and also seeks your wisdom as to future direction and what he does with himself and how he uses his energies and his talents, pray you'll give him resilience and courage and wisdom, and that he might continue to serve you and know your purposes through him. In Jesus' name, amen. And a round of applause, please, for these two guys.